Welcome to the Breezy Breakfast on July 7th, 2022. Today we are talking about plastic. The federal government is banning single-use plastics such as straws, stir sticks, cutlery, plastic bags, and takeout containers. Karen Farley is here to give us the scoop on the ban. She is a master's student who is developing an app that will collect data on foods wrapped in or contained in plastic. Morgan Dandy gives an update on the city of Guelph's ban on single-use plastics. Kevin Bowman talks about the changes in the city's solid waste policy for industrial, commercial, and institutional settings. Ted Pritchard shares his thoughts on developing a three-stream recycling system for condominiums, attitudes towards recycling, and the use of plastics in medical settings.
Good morning on this sunny July 7th, 2022. Today we're talking plastics. And we're on the traditional lands of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee people and the treaty lands of the Mississaugas of the Credit. We acknowledge that these peoples have lived and continue to live in kinship with this land. Guelph is located within the Dish with One Spoon territory. There are three rules of the Dish with One Spoon treaty: take only what you need, leave some for others, and keep the dish clean. These rules ensure that the environment is left in as good a shape or better for those living seven generations from now. Clearly, our profligate use of plastics, which are manufactured using fossil fuels and persist for centuries, does not respect the seven generation philosophy. In the Pacific Ocean, there is a garbage patch covering 1.6 million square kilometers. And that's three times the size of France. Plastic Free July was started by Rebecca Prince Ruiz, who is the founder of Plastic Free Foundation and a small team in local government in Western Australia. It is now one of the most influential environmental campaigns in the world. As you may have heard, Canada has banned several problematic and harmful single-use plastics. They include straws, stir sticks, plastic bags, ringed carriers of aluminum cans, cutlery, and takeaway containers made from or containing hard-to-recycle problematic plastics. Today, University of Waterloo master's student Karen Farley will give us the scoop on this federal plastic ban. She will also talk about the app that she is developing that will gather data on consumer habits with regard to buying plastic packaged foods. Morgan Dandy and Kevin Bowman will give us an update on the city's solid waste master plan. And Ted Pritchard will share his thoughts on plastic. So, I turn the floor over to Karen Farley to get the ball rolling. Karen.
Thanks, Tanya. Wonderful to be here today. I'm so glad that you introduced the current single-use plastic ban as banning some single-use plastic, because as many of us have seen in the media last week, recently, the single-use plastic ban is being touted as an all-out ban, and it is very, very limited at this stage. So to start off today, I thought I would introduce some of the regulations that are coming into play in the timeline, but also talk about, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about what the limitations of that ban are. And as you mentioned, it covers six items. And many people see these six items as low-hanging fruit. There are already many alternatives to using them. So although it's fantastic, it's a great start in that sense that we are looking at certain items, it definitely doesn't go far enough. If we talk about shopping bags, many of us take our own recyclable bags to the store as it's becoming more of a habit, especially for green-minded folk. And Sobeys and Walmart are two supermarket chains that have actually eliminated single-use plastic shopping bags already. There was mention earlier of the friendlier company, Guelph's homegrown venture, that has introduced a model of providing reusable takeout containers in restaurants. So there are many alternative options for these items that are under the ban already. It's also a little confusing as to what it covers exactly. So our coffee cup lids included, for example, under takeout containers. That detail is yet to be ironed out. And of course, it doesn't mention some very, very commonly used single-use plastic items that we use in huge numbers, like water bottles, plastic water bottles for water and pop and other things, as well as the area that I'm most interested in is food packaging. We consume a huge amount of plastic for food in supermarkets, etc. So to talk a little bit about the timeline, and this is where, to me, the challenge lies with the single-use plastic ban, is that it's just taking simply too long. Canada announced the ban in 2019 as an amendment to the Canadian Environmental Protection Act. And it took until now, last week, for that to actually be put into place. But even then, it's not a smooth ride. We don't actually expect to see the ban being fully implemented, the ban as it stands being fully implemented, until December 2025. So that's going to include, by the end of this year, a ban on the manufacture and import into Canada of these certain types of plastic. There is an exemption that has been put on straws for juice boxes and six-ring carriers, which will actually only be banned from June 2023. So that's another 6 months after that, apparently to allow production facilities to prepare for that shift. But I argue we've known this is coming, so why haven't we been preparing already? So in December 2023, the sale of single-use plastic will be banned in Canada. And then from the end of 2025, we'll no longer be able to export single-use plastic. But there is an exception to all of this. We will still allow single-use plastic products to be transited through Canada from one country to another. So we'll essentially become the intermediary there. So a number of people ask about single-use plastic straws, and there's a lot of concern around the ban of these items because of medical or accessibility reasons. The good news is that the federal ban does actually allow for straws to be available for institutional settings like hospitals and long-term care homes, but also will allow for single-use plastic straws to be sold in retail stores, but only out of public view for those people who actually come and actively request them. So it is a positive step forward in terms of making sure that straws are available to individuals that do need them for accessibility reasons. I could definitely talk about this for a long time, but maybe I'll shift into talking about from this rather tough news. I mean, in some ways it's positive, but it definitely doesn't go far enough. We don't have a very clear action plan from government as to how we're going to continue to expand the single-use plastic ban across many, many other items. So I'm taking a rather different approach to banning single-use plastic by essentially showing that there is demand for plastic-free food in supermarkets by green consumers, people who really don't want to be buying their cucumbers wrapped in plastic or other items that may have layers upon layers. So if we think about going to the store and we have all this good intention of coming back with our groceries in reusable bags, we want to reduce the amount of plastic that we bring to our home. But unfortunately, the reality is that we generally come home with a huge pile of plastic packaging alongside the food that we intended to buy, which we then have to deal with through recycling. But unfortunately, Canada's recycling rate is really poor for plastic waste, somewhere around 9%, which is in line with the rest of the world, but really is woefully low considering we've had blue bin schemes and other things in place for such a long time. So what if that plastic didn't exist in the first place? What if we could go to the store and on the shelves, there were options for us to buy plastic-free food? This is what I'm looking at. To put the numbers into context a little bit, about 3.3 million metric tons of plastic waste is generated in Canada each year. Of that, 16% is single-use food packaging. It's amongst the highest areas of plastic packaging waste that we generate, particularly on a consumer level. And on the industrial side, it is different. And to put that into context, that 16% of single-use plastic food packaging is enough plastic waste from food to fill the Rogers Center, if it's compacted every year. So I'm not sure if Guelph has a big stadium, perhaps the university, that you can put that into context of, but that's an awful lot of plastic. So there is some positive news in all of this doom and gloom. Research shows that around 75% of Canadian consumers actually do support a ban on single-use plastic. And about 20% of Canadians are green consumers. So we actively seek out and purchase sustainable products, including food. Or we would if we could buy them, if they are freely available and also affordable in supermarkets, particularly at the moment. It's a big concern with food prices going up so rapidly that affordability and choice around more expensive, sustainably packaged products is becoming less of an option for many people. So when we think back to our own grocery shopping experiences, there's definitely a gap for many people between what we intend to buy when we go grocery shopping and what we actually do buy. And that mountain of plastic just continues to grow. In fact, through the COVID pandemic, it's been seen that any steps we've taken to reduce the amount of plastic that we generate has gone up quite significantly. So this gap is known as the attitude behavior gap, if I can just get academic and geeky for a while. And there are many studies that examine this gap, but they often focus on either doing static surveys, finding out from people what their attitudes are towards plastic packaging, like the question, do you support a ban on single-use plastic? Or they tend to focus on what's called willingness to pay, which I mentioned briefly earlier. How much more are people willing to pay for sustainably packaged food? But if we are to truly make food sustainable, one of the things it has to be is affordable as well. And we should be able to affordably buy plastic-free food in supermarkets. So why do I look at this? It's part of my own journey into sustainability, which literally started with a reusable cup many years ago. And also doing the typical things that we do to help the planet, but actually probably more to assuage our guilt around plastic generation, beach cleanups and all sorts of things. I really started to observe the amount of waste that we generate, particularly through food. I also ran a food production company, so I was one of the evil food industry people, but on a small basis, a company in Taiwan over the last 5 years. And I had many challenges having this ideal towards sustainability while still having to take a practical view on what was feasible for my business. And it resulted in me producing a product that was wrapped in plastic as a single-use convenience item and really perpetuated this challenge. But I couldn't do much about it, sitting within this very structured, rigid industry that's so reliant on plastic. There were very little options. And a big part of that came down to the fact that sustainable packaging cost more. So from a business point of view, I couldn't buy things in enough volume to actually make it viable. So eventually, deciding to shift my attention towards sustainability as a career, I've come back to Waterloo 2 years ago to do my master's in sustainability management, and specifically tackling this area of food packaging. So the interesting gap for me is this difference between what consumers intend and what they actually do. And in order to find out more about what consumers are thinking, every time I speak to someone, in fact, just having this conversation by email with Tanya, sharing her story about trying to buy plastic-free spinach, I believe, and myself standing in front of the store, newly back in Canada, not used to some of the products that are on the shelves anymore, looking at a bottle of lime juice only to discover that it came in plastic. We look at these things and make these decisions every day as to which is going to win, our intention to be plastic free or what is actually practical and feasible when we're standing in the supermarket. So I'm developing a mobile app that will, a mobile app. Everybody seems to have one these days, but this one is going to capture those unique decisions that are made every single day from green consumers as to whether to buy or not to buy something based on their sustainable beliefs. And this information will then be compiled to present the food industry with evidence that there is enough support for plastic-free food in supermarkets, that really they should take note. There's a business opportunity for them. And I know it sounds like a disconnect to talk about a business opportunity within sustainability, but really it has to be a win-win for everyone. If supermarkets can see that they can gain market share from selling plastic-free food, green consumers win because we get to buy the food in a form that is aligns with what we believe and what we want. And of course, the environment benefits as well. So ultimately, we need to bring these things together. And essentially, my app will be collecting data from consumers, not trying to change consumers. There's a lot of work that's done on trying to change consumers' behavior, but I'm trying to capture the passion for plastic-free living from people who are already doing it or already trying to do it. So this is still in the very early stages. I'm currently in the research phase, and that research is going to support the ultimate, I say commercialization with hesitation, because sometimes it's seen as a bad word, but essentially the ability to get out there to advocate to the food industry and perhaps to shift policy as well through this data. Some steps that we can take in the meantime. Yes, we have the single-use plastic ban in place as it is, but it needs to go further. We need a strong action plan to eliminate other types of plastic, including this food packaging that we've talked about today. So I've actually initiated a petition on the House of Commons website for banning further action to ban single-use plastic. You might notice that some of the items in my petition have already been addressed, such as making plastic straws accessible to people who really need them. But it's still important to keep the pressure on government. We can't stop now when there's so much more work to do. So I could talk about this forever, but I'm going to put a stop for now, and I'm sure there'll be some questions. Feel free to connect with me. I would love to talk to people about their own journeys in plastic-free lifestyles and also the challenges that you might be experiencing there. So connect with me on LinkedIn. And you're also welcome to follow NOSUP Canada, N-O-S-U-P Canada, on all the social medias. And as my journey progresses here, I'd love to have you along for the ride.
Thank you, Karen, for that excellent introduction and for explaining your app. There are a few questions right off the bat. I think that the answer will be yes, but do you promote incremental steps or going full ban immediately? I mean, how do we pull the plastic Band-Aid off?
That's a great question. And clearly we are taking the incremental step in Canada at the moment. And most places that are doing this are, although we could go further if you've been reading in the news about the single-use plastic ban that has recently been introduced on July 1st in India, it definitely takes the initial step towards this a lot more seriously. It includes considerably more items in the first round, but it is incremental and we do need to prepare. The thing is, we shouldn't be waiting to prepare or waiting to change, waiting to do this, or any action that can be happening now. So it will be incremental, but at the moment we don't have an incremental plan. And that's the part that bothers me. If we really are going to go truly plastic free by whichever deadline we're looking at, whether it be 2030, which is less than 8 years away, or beyond, we need to know what the steps are.
Indeed. So we talk a lot about the recycling of plastics, right? And I wanted to ask you to briefly tell us about which plastics can be recycled into other plastics. Because my understanding is, I mean, you can't recycle a plastic bag into another plastic bag. Can you comment on the direction of recyclability of plastics?
Thank you. I do get asked about recycling a lot, and it's honestly not my wheelhouse. We know that in collecting plastics and recycling them, each time we recycle them, they do degrade and generally can't be used for the same purpose. So they tend to be recycled downwards, essentially. We also see many things of recycling from, say, food packaging, which tends to have a lot of virgin plastic, into items that can use recycled plastic. So that's definitely a step that the food industry could take as well, is to start using more recycled content in plastic. But honestly, I don't believe recycling is the answer. Ultimately, we need to be eliminating it at source. As I said before, if we were going to recycle effectively, we would have done it by now.
Okay, absolutely. So I'm going to shift away from the recycling issue. What about plastics made from plant materials? Is a shift to renewables like paper bags and wood or bamboo actually better? Or do we need to shift to using less and adapting to using fewer containers, let's say, to put our food in?
I think the second approach is ultimately where we should be going, is less. If we go back to straws, and I know it's something that comes up a lot, but of course we've got that environmental saying, it's only one plastic straw, said 8 billion people. So if we think about the ultimate goal is to use less ultimately, do we even need that straw in the first place? Maybe we should be eliminating it from our lives altogether. But in terms of plant-based plastics, I'm not an expert on the plastic materials. It's something I definitely stay away from, but there are lots of exciting things coming out. The challenges with those two So PLA plastic or bioplastic that has become very popular in plastic alternative circles recently has the challenge of processing it. So when I lived in Taiwan, for example, I looked into using PLA plastic as an option for my business, but I discovered that there was only one facility in the country that could actually process this PLA plastic. And they didn't have enough capacity to do it. So they were actually literally collecting it until there was enough of this PLA waste to process it.
May I just quickly interrupt you? What does PLA stand for?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot here. It's a very long word.
That's okay.
I'm going to have to look that up. But yeah, it's bioplastic. It's often made from corn or other natural ingredient materials, food-based materials. Good qualification there. I will put the answer in the chat in a minute. But it is exciting in one way, but it also has its own challenges. Other areas of plant-based plastics or other options out there might actually combine this plant-based and PET plastics or traditional oil-based plastics into one material. So ultimately there is less actual plastic in there, but it still has to be processed. So yeah, it's definitely a challenge. What's encouraging is that people are coming up with new alternatives. There's a lot of innovation happening in the space. And if there was one thing that I would also push government to do is to be providing more support, more grants and funding for innovation in the plastic alternative space.
Yes, you're hitting on one of the questions that was put into the chat. Should consumers really be expected to choose between plastic packaged food, which pollutes and the manufacturer doesn't have to handle the waste, versus biodegradable, recyclable packaging? And that is to say, isn't it in the public interest that governments regulate such that all choices are good ones? I think you just answered that by encouraging governments to provide grants so that manufacturers can look into or research better ways to package their foods.
The person asking this question is certainly in line with what I would love to see for our world, where we didn't have any plastic in supermarkets. But it is unrealistic at this point, considering where we are. It would be great to see that as the end goal. But plastic has played a role in food processing for so long now and does have some advantages over other materials at this point, although there's still a lot of work being done to look at how using recycled content may or may not affect food safety, et cetera. So the ultimate goal, yes, I would love to see supermarkets without plastic. But for many of us that do aspire to plastic-free food lifestyle, we're already looking elsewhere. We're going to zero waste stores, bulk food stores. We go to farmers markets. But wouldn't it be great if we could also pick those items up in supermarkets too? So it is going to be a slow process, and it requires shifts on many, many fronts, and one of them being policy. And if that's not moving fast enough, then we can use consumer action to show that that's what we want, to illustrate the demand for plastic-free food.
Absolutely, and that's what your app will provide data for. How do you respond to the argument that all of this plastic packaging is necessary for food safety reasons?
That is where we've got to in the food industry today. And remembering that plastic is not only considered the safer option, but it's also extremely cheap. So it's very appealing for the food industry to maintain the status quo. There's no real reason at this point to shift no business reason when it's working, working for business, that is, of course, increasing profitability, etc. So there's no doubt that introducing plastic-free foods will have raised concerns around food safety, because we've been ingrained to think that food covered in plastic is safer. And there's a lot of work to be done, research, consumer education. But if we think back, even in my lifetime, so I'm not going to say how many years, we didn't have so much plastic in stores in the first place. And there were alternatives which meant that food could be kept safe on the shelves. So perhaps we need to go back to some of those methods as well and think that if they worked back then, and we've got additional technologies and additional materials that are plastic free today, we can probably maintain the same levels of food safety. And I'm not going to say that I'm a food safety expert either. I was at a conference at the University of Guelph just a couple of weeks ago on food science, and there are many, many people working on the challenges of packaging and food safety as well. Be good to see what they come up with.
Indeed. You were reading my mind when you mentioned being in the grocery store and not seeing as much plastic. I remember when pop and, you know, peanut butter and the like were packaged in glass. And I remember, well, it's coming back to independent butcher shops where meat is packaged in that butcher paper. So that's an improvement for sure, although I do believe it does contain on the inside some sort of plastic, right? But it's an improvement.
Yeah, all of these are steps in the right direction, as well as reusable models that are being tested in a big grocery chain around reusable packaging. So we would use something, finish it, bring the package back to the store and either refill it or get another one. And then the empty container would be processed back into the cycle. Essentially like the Friendlier Company does with takeaway packaging, would be done in the supermarket as well. So that's very positive. There are steps that are happening. But I was at a conference in Singapore a few years ago, one of the last trips I took before the pandemic from Taiwan. And it was really encouraging to see the innovations that were happening and the things that the food industry was working on. But in many cases, they bring them out as a small sample, mainly for green marketing, to say, okay, we have this technology, we're able to introduce. The example that I saw at the time was recyclable toothpaste tubes, which are starting to trickle in now slowly, but there should be so many more of these innovations out there that are actually put into practice. So if the industry knows that people want it, maybe they'll bring them out more quickly.
Okay, so there's one more question. Is there any significant research into the attitude versus action gap for those using plastic packaging as opposed to the consumer? What other regulations or tools might we use to move away from plastics besides banning them on the producer's side?
So most of the research that I've come across is around consumer attitudes to sustainable packaging, or what needs to happen on the consumer side. And this is the challenge that I see, is that so much of the efforts around environmental protection and plastic waste are around consumer behavior change. We're not talking enough about what the industry has to do. So there are moves towards extended producer responsibility, where the producers of the plastic waste need to be responsible for its ultimate disposal or return into the system. Because ultimately, if we are going to generate plastic waste or any other type of waste, we really want to be able to return it into the system through things like reuse or recyclability. And there is more in the way of push government mandates. In fact, California has just introduced that in the last couple of weeks. So it's very exciting to see firm measures in policy and changes. But ultimately, it is all of us doing our part, and it needs to include government, it needs to include the producers and ourselves as individuals as well.
Thank you very much, Karen. We all appreciate your efforts and sharing your knowledge about plastics. I'd like to turn to Morgan and Kevin, who will give us an update on the City of Guelph Solid Waste Master Plan as it applies to plastic use.
Thanks, Tanya. Kevin and I split up the way that it was presented to the single-use plastics. And then, so I'm gonna look after that aspect of it. And Kevin's gonna give us an update on the IC&I. So that's the institutional, commercial, and industrial waste streaming and how that's being changed. So basically on April 4th at Committee of the Whole, there was a presentation by city staff on how we are going to implement a single-use items ban within our city. Originally, the staff recommendation was to start it up on March 1st of 2023 for the phase one. And there was an amendment that was carried and passed at council at the end of the month. So we're actually having our ban effective as of January 1st, 2023. So less than 6 months from now. It is a reduction strategy and ban on shopping bags, polystyrene foam, and plastic straws. There are 13 business types that are highlighted as being affected by this, which include food premise, catering business, food vehicle, amusement establishments, bed and breakfast, hotel establishments, merchant stand, personal service establishment, holistic services, public assembly hall, adult entertainment, pawnbroker, and secondhand goods or salvage dealer. And in going through looking at each of the separate items highlighted, there are some exemptions. So for everything on this list, hospitals and community care facilities are exempt from having to follow these items. Shopping bags, the reusable ones that are going to be offered need to be primarily made of fabric and capable of at least 100 uses. If they are paper, they must have a recycled content, which is going to be raised as time goes on. I believe it's starting at 40%. And then it has to also be marked as being recyclable to be qualified as not being banned within this bylaw. And then businesses must ask if a shopping bag is needed. So no longer, starting January 1st, you're not automatically going to get a bag anymore. You will be asked. And I think a lot of places, I know that I've noticed in different grocery stores being asked, do you need a bag? Because I've been shopping with reusable bags since 2007. And then if there is a charge with shopping bags, it's actually supposed to start for a charge of $1 for the first year of the ban. And it has to be included on the receipt as a separate line item. So it can't be hidden in the cost of anything else. It must show up as a separate line item. And to Karen's point, this ban does not include any packaged food bags or overwraps or packaging used or bulk foods. Moving on to this polystyrene. One of the things that I found interesting, if a business is having something shipped to them from outside of Guelph that's filled and sealed before it reaches the business here in Guelph, and it's from outside of Guelph, it's still allowed. So I found that to be an interesting sort of, so as long as it's sourced outside of the city, it can still be in polystyrene if it's filled and sealed before it gets here. Then we've got the plastic straws. Oh, and charitable food services during a declared emergency are allowed to use polystyrene foam. So that's going to be a change for regular charitable food services, having to move away from anything that's made of polystyrene. Plastic straw ban, again, hospitals and community care facilities exempt. As Karen mentioned, any straws that are attached to a drinking box or a drinking pouch are exempt. So not only do you get a plastic straw, but you get a plastic covering of that straw. What else? Oh, in the store, in the grocery stores, you can purchase plastic straws in packages of 20 or more for personal use. And anyone that is a bubble tea vendor is allowed to use plastic straws. I don't understand that one. Maybe somebody knows more about bubble tea than I do and why a plastic straw is required for them. And then, of course, where plastic straws are required for accessibility, businesses are required to have that available upon request. And then we've got single-use beverage cups and single-use utensils. For the beverage cups, there's going to be a minimum charge of 25 cents on a single-use cup. And I actually have a question, because when I think about, and I would love to have a little bit of conversation on this. When I think about single-use cups, I automatically think about hot beverages. But as I was reading through this, I'm like, oh, cold beverages too. Those are single-use cups. So when you get a fountain drink, when you order an iced coffee or an iced tea or something like that in a business. So it's not, I was only thinking hot beverage cups, but it's all beverage cups made of plastic. So that's going to be interesting to see how that goes. Charitable food services are exempt from the ban on single-use beverage cups, having to charge for them. And you can still buy them for personal use in packages of 6 or more. And any business that's giving away free drinks where there's no charge for what's in the cup doesn't have to charge for the cup. With the plastic, with the single-use utensils, we're supposed to either ask for them or they are provided in a self-serve area. Charitable food is exempt, and you can still purchase them in packages of 20 plus. So that's sort of a brief rundown on what the changes are going to be coming to Guelph. And I'm going to turn it over to Kevin, and he can let us know what the changes to IC&I are going to be. That is industrial, commercial, and institutional.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, Morgan. A little bit of context. So municipalities are responsible for waste collection for all the residential properties within their jurisdiction, their boundaries, but they are not required to do waste collection services for institutional, commercial, or industrial sites. They're typically on their own to hire private waste collection and disposal services. However, currently Guelph does provide waste collection services for some institutional, industrial, and commercial locations in the city. The current restrictions are they have to be small, although that's not explicitly defined. And they're typically places of worship or nonprofit organizations, daycares. And so they generate smaller quantities of waste that are similar to what like a multi-residential location would be generating, but not like a full-size apartment building. And these places have to be located on a residential route. So even if you're a small commercial operation that's not generating a lot of waste, if you're not on a residential route, then the city will not come collect your waste. So that's the current situation where the city is providing that waste collection for smaller businesses and institutional and industrial sites, but only if they're on a residential route. The proposed change is to keep those rules in place, but also more specifically define what they mean by small. So the generated waste has to fit into the same residential bins that people have for their house. So you've got the, and they have to comply with the three streams. So if you're a small residential or small commercial business on a residential route, but you're not sorting your garbage, you're just throwing it all into the gray bin, then the city's not going to pick that up because you're not complying with the three stream waste bylaw. So essentially the changes that are being proposed are for small mixed use buildings. Your waste has to fit into the standard bins that all the residential houses are using, and you have to be sorting your waste. Apart from that, there doesn't seem to be any significant changes. For institutional facilities, they're proposing to limit the three stream collection services to, as I say, places of worship, daycares, community centers, but again, only if they're on a residential collection route already. Their waste has to fit into those standard bins that all the residences are using. And again, they have to comply with the sorting. Lastly, there's a proposal to introduce collecting organics collection to services to schools that are not currently receiving city service. So most schools are not having their waste collected by the city, but it looks like the city is looking to extend that service, but only for organics at this point. I guess they feel like they have the capacity to take on that collection of the organics, but not necessarily the rest that the recycling and the garbage waste would be of a greater volume. And so they're leaving that to whichever private service provider is doing that now.
I'm going to ask Ted to talk a little bit about his experiences with regards to plastics and three streaming and whatnot. Ted?
I want to approach this three ways. First way is that for about 10 years, I lobbied the city for three stream waste collection for condominiums, which are residences and they do pay taxes on the basis that they receive those services. But until Guelph was committed to put the trucks together, the large bins together for condominiums, three stream waste wasn't available to a lot of particularly high-rise buildings or mid-rise buildings. So I was a lobbyist for the Canadian Condominium Institute with the city of Guelph for 10 years, and eventually three stream waste came to condominiums in Guelph, not necessarily because of me, more because of the staff at the waste treatment center who understood how much they were missing of the plastics and things that condominium owners were using that was going to landfill. So that's the first one. Second one I'd like to touch on a little bit is how consumers actually abuse the three-stream waste system in Guelph. It's there for their use, but they are constantly polluting all three streams with plastic. And the third thing I want to talk about is the fact that now that I'm having chemotherapy treatments in hospital, I can't believe how important or how significant single-use plastics are in medicine and how much gets used. And I don't see a way out of that stream or another product that will replace that. So that those are the three ways I'm looking at this. So it took 10 years basically for the city to invest in two over $500,000 front end loader trucks that will load dumpsters. Up until then, most high rise waste was going to a garbage dump or an incinerator somewhere. So that included recycling, green material, and also garbage. And the city worked really hard to bring the waste and was willing to spend a lot of money on condominiums to bring them online. We're talking millions by the time you look at the cost of drivers, the trucks, the bins that the city would have to supply. And until then, there would be private haulers like Wasteco that would collect the garbage from a high-rise building, but it would all go into the same bin. So it was all going to a garbage dump somewhere. It was probably going to Michigan. And Guelph can now handle its own condominium garbage. And that's also where they are able to assist with some small industrial garbage. Guelph actually didn't have trucks that could move their own garbage without having front-end loader trucks. So in the parks, if there was ever a dumpster, it was a private hauler that was taken away, and the city didn't have control of the three stream. There were counselors that were on my side that were telling me how to delegate to the city. They were the people at the waste station, solid waste station, were amazing in the support they gave me as a private individual to try and get the city to put in that kind of cost. So the city, I believe, did its part. The people who are still not doing their part are condominium owners and probably other owners, residential owners. They pollute all three streams with plastic bags. And I can understand why you don't want to take out your food scraps and all of those things to the garbage pail and dump them into the pail because you've then got to wash it out. But that's what the city is expecting you to do. The city expected condominium buildings to build a container area if they were using the small carts in some townhouse condominiums and even some high-rise condominiums as a place where rats and other animals would be prevented at getting at the three-stream garbage things. Unfortunately, owners would do things like they would come up with one bag, dump it all into somebody's garbage bin, and that's still happening. And the recycled garbage in particular, I'm upset when I see plastic bags in the recycled stuff because it's contaminating the whole load with plastic. All the consumer has to do is dump the bag into, and you're dumping cardboard and cleaned out bottles and cans that have no smell attached to them. They don't need to be wrapped in plastic, but we continue to do that. And it's residential owners as well. If you drive around on a garbage day and take a look at the containers that they can't squash down low enough, you'll see all kinds of plastic and recycling. And you'll see all kinds of plastic in the garbage load. And I can understand that more because that's going to a different stream. But you'll also see plastic in the green one. And I can understand that as well because of the smell factor, particularly in summer. But in winter, there's absolutely no smell and no reason why you can't just dump kitchen scraps and paper toweling and all those things into a green garbage bag, except convenience for us. And there are still condominiums who have made the decision that it's too hard to use the city's recycling garbage. It's much easier to pay a fellow in a pickup truck to come around and take everything away in a black bag. And it's easier for the people that are using the system as well. So they're dumping kitchen scraps, recycled material, and that's the onus is on the consumer. They're the only ones that can fix that. The onus is on the condominium board. They're the only one that can fix that by not allowing that to happen in their condominium and making sure that the three streams end up in the city's use. That's my complaint about consumers. That's my congratulations for the city to get three stream recycling to condominium owners. It took a long time and a lot of work by city staff, but they did it. And the last thing I want to mention is I can't believe how much as a sick person I consume in plastics in a hospital. It's got to be single use. You can't reuse all the plastics that they feed my drugs to me with, and the other eight people sitting in the room, and it's every day of the week that basically they're servicing up to eight people and probably 12 people with blood products, chemotherapy, and there is no other product that works as well as plastic. I'm just hoping none of this stuff ends on that plastic island in the middle of the Pacific because it's medical use. I'm assuming it gets incinerated, which is a carbon problem. And the hospitals all have whole agencies looking after disposing of their own materials. And it's an expense, a major expense. And the last little complaint I'm gonna make here, if I have time, I know we're coming up to 9 o'clock, is what has happened to paper bags? I can destroy a paper bag that's full of medicine that I get at the pharmacy by the time I get to the car that the person is taking me home in. And I've just gripped it. But the paper bags themselves, that you get from, say, a store like Walmart, that there's one of three stores I go to. I go to Costco, Walmart, and Zayers. And one of them won't let me use recyclable bags when they're putting the groceries together because they supply the paper. Well, they have neat little handles and everything. But you try to pick up a paper bag with three cans of soup in it, the paper handles are in your hand and the soup is on the floor. They've got to do something a little bit better before paper replaces plastic. And paper used to replace plastic all the time in the bad old days. So paper has to be improved. That's a fourth thing. I only meant to do the first three.
One thing I'd like to bring up is I used to be able to bring my medication bottles back to the pharmacy to be refilled again. And of course, ever since COVID that is not allowed. I'm going to push for that again. However, it's the idea of safety in our society that seems to trump everything else. With regard to apartment buildings, condo buildings, doing organics, Ted, I want to let you know that I spoke with one of the organic people at the city of Guelph, and he assured me that their system of processing organics, if a plastic bag happens to get into that system, it does not continue on. It's there are sieves, I suppose, there are screens that catch such things, not just plastic bags, but other plastic pieces. What I'm getting at is that if people are lazy or worried about the smell, that isn't a good enough reason for a condo board, for example, to say, well, we can't do organic recycling. We can't do a three stream, including organics. So that's a good piece of news, I found. I spoke with the people at the Flower Barrel, which is a bulk store downtown Guelph. They are going back to allowing you to use your own Tupperware, for example, to get your food items like flour and oats and whatnot after over 2 years of not being able to do that on account of COVID. So that's some good news there. People are getting more into using beeswax wrapping papers for food and other items.
There's going to be standardized what goes where. And that's the big part of their problem right now when it comes to being able to recycle stuff, is every municipality has its own rules. There's no, like, there's stuff that I can recycle in Guelph that I couldn't recycle in Milton and vice versa. So when you're moving around from region to region, it creates a lot of confusion and things end up in the wrong stream. So, you know, that's one thing that I think will really help, is by having that across the board standard of, it doesn't matter if you're in Kincardine or you're in Guelph, the same things go into the same streams regardless.
Can I sort of tack on Morgan's statement? I'll give you an example. There are black plastics now that have recycling logos on the bottom. And within Guelph can recycle the black plastics as opposed to the styrofoam or clear plastics or those things. Toronto can't, because it has black belts that transfer the material from one place to another in their sorting stations, and it doesn't pick up the black plastics. It's as if a belt is there, and there's no way for Toronto to read the black plastic, so they ban it from their recycling stream. So Guelph can recycle black plastics, Toronto, the whole city, can't. And that probably happens over and over again in different municipalities.
Karen, you mentioned that straws are a hot button issue. So, because everyone seems to be all concerned about straws. What do you think is the best way forward with regard to the replacement of straws?
Yeah, straws definitely are the one that comes up time and time again. And I really do get that if someone has a genuine need for straws to be able to eat or drink, there are alternatives to straws that some commenters have mentioned. Using silicone straws or paper straws have become fairly popular in some restaurants as well. A lot of people don't like paper straws. And silicone straws do have the issues of being able to wash or sanitize them, whether at home or in a food service setting. So they don't seem to be good options for people with accessibility issues. And that's why it's so important to have that that path or option available to people who really have to access them. You know, it's, in some cases, we may just find we have no alternative for plastic, either now or in the future. And we have to be aware of those issues. Other areas around access to clean drinking water may require us to continue to provide plastic water in plastic bottles to communities that have that issue. But that doesn't mean that we all have to walk around with plastic bottles of water in our hands.
Thank you, Karen. I believe that Morgan has a question.
Actually, it was a question that Karen posed in the chat. She was wondering what the support resistance was in Guelph to instituting our single-use items ban. And I thought, since we have a counselor in residence, that Phil would be the best one to answer that question.
Counselor in residence, I've really been elevated to the lofty heights of a Fulbright scholarship. That's great. Thank you very much. The Guelph's efforts on improving our waste, our reducing our waste, is, I've got to give staff a lot of credit for what they're trying to do. And I would have to say that the resistance comes from we, the politicians, because we are trying in some ways to predict what the reaction and what the resistance will be from the community. And I think we need to be very, very mindful of that. There's a few things that I want to touch on, because there's a number of things that have been raised that I think are really important. We're trying to push, in some senses, the population to be far more mindful about waste. And that's not been an easy crusade. And I apologize if you don't think the reference is apropos, but it's the same with smoking. As we slowly end smoking, which for all intents and purposes we've done, I know you can still smoke cigarettes, but let's face it, the places that you can smoke them are pretty limited. I think you can smoke them behind your furnace on a Thursday night when the moon is down, and that's about it. That was one hell of a challenge. Dealing with garbage is an even bigger one. And it's a bigger one because like cigarettes, it's a lifestyle issue. And I think we actually have to admit we are addicted to plastics. And there's no two ways about that. I think it's a very appropriate phrase. I just look around my house right now and I look at not single-use plastics, but all of the plastics that are being used in my house. And I think that we have come to accept that plastic is in many senses an answer to all of our problems. And so when it comes to dealing with waste and it comes to dealing with plastic, it means that everything from the coffee or the soft drink cup that people are using to even, I'm just looking at a CO2 monitor over across the room, are going to be composed of plastic in some way, shape, or form. And all of them at some point must be disposed. And some of them create real problems. Interestingly enough, the cover on my CO2 monitor is more easily disposed of than a coffee cup is, because it's not a laminate. And coffee cups and soft drink cups are a real challenge. And this creates a problem for the consumer. I'm thinking about what Ted's talking about with meat wrappers and so on and so forth. I actually have to, in some senses, blame us, because we've created a number of confusing expectations. Even to this very day, Ted, I don't know whether I'm supposed to put plastic wrap from meat in organic or not. So I wash it. and I put it in landfill. Now, I think if anybody recalls, we had somebody from our waste management staff here and basically gave us a quiz about 4 years ago on what we are to do with this, that, or the other. And nobody passed the bloody quiz because we didn't know what we're supposed to do. And I think that that is in many respects a problem, because the use of plastics and other packaging materials is so ubiquitous. Let me give you a really good example. This is some of my legacy from COVID. These are the meals that we've bought from a fellow trying to keep him employed during COVID, because he was a chef at the Elora Mill and decided to start selling food out of his house so that he can make a living. So we bought it. He can't reuse these things. It's illegal. So we reuse them as much as we can. But if I'm reusing them and I have countless of these things in my house, and I'm fairly conscientious of this, what about other people? And that's the real challenge. I think that there's a will, but because it is so all-encompassing in our lives, plastic is a real issue to deal with, whether it's medical. Like Ted, I was at the dentist yesterday. I don't even know if I'm making sense to them. I'm Tylenol 3s right now. And every time I go to the dentist, they unwrap what looks like a new instrument. Now, I know that it's not, but it's been sealed, it's been sterilized, and then they have to open it up for me, not just because of COVID, but because of HIV, because of this, because of that. We've become an overly sanitized culture. Some of it's good and some of it's bad. I recognize, Ted, that in chemo, you want things to be clean. I totally get that. I sort of want things to be clean when they go in my mouth, too. But the challenge, and I saw Janet Wood put it in the chat, is why did we ever get away from glass for many things? Glass is a relatively inert commodity substance. It can hold an awful lot of stuff really well for quite literally centuries if we wanted to. Proof of that is the bottles of wine that have been discovered off the coast of France or whatever that people want to buy because it's 200 years old. And I'm not being facetious about that. But in Ontario, the reason that we have the amount of plastic that we have is a deliberate conspiracy from the soft drink bottlers, Coke and Pepsi, who really, in order to reduce their costs, wanted to pass on the cost of disposal to consumers through the tax system so that they could actually eliminate the cleaning aspect of their bottling lines. That some glass was explosive, but that the issue was also nonsense. And I can tell you that it's quite true. Some glass is explosive, but when I was delivering pop for Pepsi and Coca-Cola, the explosive glass, if anybody remembers these things, were these bomb-shaped 2-liter bottles of Pepsi that if you happened to just drop a case just ever so slightly, that thing literally would explode. They were dangerous. But it raises a question. Who the hell needs 2 liters of Pepsi anyway? But this is the kind of society that we've got into. It's one of convenience. And let's face it, plastic is very convenient for people. That's a problem. And it's cheap. And that's another problem. And so when we get it down to the single-use commodities like food wraps, we don't think about it at all. I'll tell you right now, I haven't had plastic wrap in my house for 30 years. I'll use anything but. I'll use parchment paper. I will recycle. I'll do whatever I possibly can. And I wouldn't have these things in my house, except that I didn't have a choice. And that's part of the real issue. We don't have a choice. So when it comes to the local support, I know this has been a really long answer, but when it comes to local support, frankly, I don't think it should be there. I think it should be provincially and federally mandated. because it does lead to confusion about what goes on in Toronto, what goes on in Milton, and what goes on in Guelph. And it leads to confusion for every consumer when we go to our three-stream system, which probably should be seven streams, and we don't know exactly where to put something. Is it clean plastic? Is it dirty plastic? Is it organic? These questions are being asked thousands of times a day in Guelph by many, many people, and we've never been clear upon it. So it's a political issue that, in my mind, does create a tremendous challenge, but we still need to get there. The real issue is, do we go fast or do we go slow?
I just want to comment on a couple of things that Phil said. It would be impossible for hospitals to deal with glass tubing and plastic tubing in the same role and disposal. The glass would actually pollute the disposal of the plastic. So I can understand why hospitals use everything disposable plastic, because it can all be disposed together. And they use tons of single-use plastics that if you started polluting them with glass, and it could be done, instead of a plastic bag at the top of the long thing of stuff, there could be a bottle that's hanging from the rack. It would increase the amount of time our very exhausted nurses are trying to deal with. It would complicate their lives incredibly. And it would certainly complicate, and it's just one industry. And you figure that if you can't mix glass and plastic, and how many ice cream industry, so many things will just be more convenient to stay with plastic. And because of the contamination factor with the food that's traveling through those plastics, you really can't mix black glass and plastic. You do either go all glass or you go all plastic. And some industries just can't accommodate that. So it's a good idea. I can't believe the wastage in a hospital that's keeping me alive.
Thank you, Ted. We all appreciate your insights. Indeed, thank you, Karen. Thank you, Morgan and Kevin. And thank you, Phil. But yes, I want to thank everybody who presented and everyone who stayed till the bitter end at 9:22. On Monday, July 11th at 1 p.m., there's a special council meeting, and it's the decision report, Shaping Guelph Official Plan Amendment 80. There's a council planning meeting also on Monday, July 11th, and that's at 6 p.m. We've got decision reports. We've got a public meeting for 785 Gordon Street, and we've got a public meeting for 1066 1204 Gordon Street. The special council meeting on Wednesday, July 13th at 6 p.m., there is the statutory public meeting report with regard to the comprehensive zoning bylaw review. The Guelph Tool Library is having a repair cafe on Saturday, July 16th, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. This is located at the PV Mart, which is at 545 Silver Creek. Please have your say about the comprehensive zoning bylaw review. Again, the public meeting is on July the 13th. And if you have any questions or comments, email zoningreview@guelph.ca. And finally, next week on Breezy Breakfast, we've got the Home for Good campaign with Dominica McPherson, who is the director of the Guelph Wellington Task Force for Poverty Elimination, Glenna Banda, who is the executive director of the United Way for Guelph, Wellington, and Dufferin, and Chris Willard, who is the executive director of the Guelph Community Foundation. And that's a wrap for today. Thank you all for being here, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for taking the time to learn about single-use plastics. Remember, we lived for thousands of years without plastic. Thanks to the Breezy team of Kevin Bowman, Morgan Dandy, Tanya Gavard, and Phil Out. Music provided by Jules Stern. I'm Jiayu Yan, the producer of the Breezy Breakfast podcasts.